Jeff Merrick, picture a poker table or a blackjack table. Picture a blackjack table.
Are there dogs? Are there dogs playing poker? Because that's my favorite one.
Think of like a high stakes blackjack table at a casino.
Okay. I'm an MGM Grand guy, by the way. You go to Vegas a lot? I'm an MGM Grand guy.
I've only been to Vegas once, to be honest with you. I want to go back in the worst way. I feel like Malcolm McDowell in Star Trek Generations, where he spends the entire movie trying to blow up a star in order to get back to the Nexus, his paradise. Because when I was in Vegas, there are a few times I've ever been happier than when I was in Las Vegas, so I want to get back in the worst way.
And I thought I would hate it the first time I went. I was like, this represents everything about America that I can't stand. I've loved every single second I've ever been in Vegas.
We should do a Merrick versus Brzezinski radio exploration of the Vegas expansion issue. Wink.
We're like amateur anthropologists. We'll put on the hula skirt and eat the can of worms, but really we're in Las Vegas as amateur anthropologists, Greg, studying the viability of an expansion model into the Las Vegas market. We want to just get drunk at casinos.
Tell me more about your expansion plans. Oh, look, $10 for all you can eat crab's legs. Up, slot machine, cha-ching. Think about like a high-stakes blackjack table, okay? So in one of the seats is a guy in a Canadian Juniors jersey, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And he has all these chips. And he is at the high stakes table, and he is playing Merrick for the chance to buy a new house.
Ooh.
He's either going to break the casino, uh-huh, or he's going to lose everything he's got, but he's all in.
All right.
Next to him is a guy in a torn up Leonard Skinner t-shirt. He's drinking a Bud Light. He doesn't really know what hockey is. He doesn't have any chips in front of him. He has a collection of Lint Monopoly money.
Does the t-shirt fit him, or does his belly hang out of the bottom of it?
No, it's ill-fitting. His belly is hanging out. He has Lint, Monopoly money in front of him.
He's sort of
familiar with the game that they're playing, but he'd rather play Go Fish or War. And the problem is, Merrick, that the guy who's all in, the guy who's there, and he's life or death with this game, has to hear a steady diet of shit-talking from the Leonard Skinner guy. And here's the problem. If he talks back, The dude in the ripped t-shirt is just like, man, I don't even care about this game. Woo, guns. And that, Merrick, is the World Junior Championship Tournament from the eyes of an American hockey fan, as was evident last night when Canada lost to Russia and every single American fan on a social media platform was talking shit. The Canadians talk shit back and the Americans giggled because we just don't care as much as you do.
It's not just Americans though, Greg. That's a great analogy too, by the way. It's not just Americans though. I mean, outside of the friends and family and the people that actually play and the hardest of the hardcore hockey fans around the world, they don't care in Finland. They don't care in Sweden. They don't care in Czech Republic, Slovakia, Russia. Switzerland, Germany. They don't care. There's only one country that cares immensely. There's only one country that takes the love of this tournament to a whole new level, and that's Canada. Everybody else around the world, Greg, it's a wonderful tournament. I really enjoy the tournament. It brings out both the best and the worst, and we'll talk about both of them over the course of this podcast. But this tournament is looked at, I think, around the world in the proper way. Like in the Canadian context, this thing is be all, end all. Canada stand the world. But the rest of the world looks at this tournament for what it really is. It's a development tournament for young hockey players. Not unlike the Ivan Hlinka tournament, not unlike the scattering of U18s and U17s. It is the same thing, but this one has the largest of stages in Canada. And for us, for whatever reason, maybe it's because, you know, the jingoism gets ratcheted up and here comes the nationalism and there's Canadian flags everywhere and oh, Canada. For some reason, this tournament has taken on a different meaning than in the rest of the world. Like, to your point, is the rest of the world kind of doesn't care. I think the rest of the world kind of looks at this tournament for what it is. These are kids developing, and that's what this tournament is all about.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, I think Americans are caring more about the tournament. One, because we're becoming more familiar with younger players through the NCAA, through the availability of the internet, because of the NHL draft, but also because we want to see you guys disappointed in hockey. Nothing makes us happier than to see Canadian fans getting very excited about something hockey-related, waving flags and singing songs and treating young adults as if they're hockey celebrities before they lose, and then they're just children again. And then to see your hopes and dreams crushed by an evil empire like the Russians makes us happy. It makes us happy. So it's become sport now because we all know Canada's going to be in at least the semifinals. we don't know if the Americans are going to be there. We might have to go play Latvia in the relegation round for all we know. But we know Canada's going to be there. And because there's a chance to root against the Canadians, that is drawing more fans to become interested in World Juniors.
I don't mind that.
If we don't give a shit about the tournament.
Ask anyone before the game yesterday. And Greg, I don't know if we mentioned it on the podcast. We talked about it in our morning phone call. For the good of the game, the right team won yesterday. The right team, absolutely, for a couple of reasons. I mean, Canada in the final every year, it kind of becomes a snooze. And eventually you say it's the tilted rank, and it's just becoming, you know, essentially a three, maybe just a two-team tournament every year. This is the issue that the women's tournament is having. We'll talk to Angela Ruggiero about this a little bit later on. But this tournament, the way Canadian hockey fans organize themselves, structure themselves and cheer for this tournament, to me is a little over the top. Like, I can understand, although I don't agree with it, and I think it was, you know, a bloated, overhyped event, I can understand 1972. I can understand the 1987 tournament. I can understand 1976, which was the first big one for me. Sittler puts it past Vladimir Zarrilla, and Team Canada scores and wins the initial Canada Cup. I get all that. But what I don't get is how people completely flip themselves upside down for what essentially is just, and I keep going back to the same thing, a development tournament. And ask anyone, I was saying the best thing for hockey is for Canada to lose, specifically to the Russians. Why? Because now, so more than ever, Canada has its rival back.
And that's
Canada has a rival. Yeah. It's a great thing.
For sure.
Like, this is, here's the thing about Canadians in hockey, Greg.
Yes.
And I know
please,
from what
please
you
educate
speak,
been, me as an ugly American. We just got
all
hockey
right.
in our country.
Hey, New Jersey
ago.
Boy. New Jersey
yes,
boy
please.
In the background. Pipe
okay,
down. The Canadian is talking here about hockey. Okay? You have no rights. All right?
Your game, your soil, your ice.
Oh, Jesus. I know. I'm trying to dispel that for so long. Here's the thing about being a Canadian and being a Canadian hockey fan.
Yes, please.
In Canada, there is a particular type of, I guess for lack of a better term, you can call it hockey arrogance. We look down our noses at a lot of other countries who don't get the game the way we do. How come America? How come Sweden? How come Finland? How come, you know, pick England? How come Italy? How come Russia? How come they don't love the game and play the game and understand the game the same way that we do? Because this is the most wonderful game that has ever been created. So we have that viewpoint for the rest of the world. But if another country has the nerve and audacity to treat it, embrace it, hold it sacred like a child, Greg Wyshynski, develop it, nurture it, you know, water it, grow this thing and grow great players and grow great teams and have the audacity and nerve to defeat Canada, we get very, very angry. It's like we want to have it both ways. We want to be the guy that dates the hot chick who's really smart, but just a little bit dumber than he is. Because if she gets too smart, he gets really insecure really fast.
Well, see, now
that's
you're speaking
kind
my,
of what it's like in Canada.
But now you're speaking my language as an American, because it's like basketball. Like when the U.S. Dream Team thing was happening, and there was, and this is before the big international invasion of the NBA, we were king shit. There was nobody touching the U.S. It was our game. Our
everybody
court, our parquet floor.
Oh, yeah.
And it was that whole thing, right? So if another country stepped to us and, God forbid, upset us in world championships or the Olympics or whatever, it was insulting. It was, much like it is in Canada, a take a step back and reevaluate what it is we're doing kind of thing. Here's the three things about Canadian juniors that I know I can count on every year. The first is that inevitably somebody will bitch about there being the best players available not playing for this team because they're playing in the NHL. And that always amuses me.
I want to come back to that.
Okay. That always amuses me as an American because our best athletes, let me think about this, don't play hockey. They play football. They play basketball. They play baseball. If we had some way to use mind control waves to get the best athletes in America to put on skates and grab a stick, we
That'd
would win
over.
World Juniors every year. They'd have to rename it the American World Junior Tournament, and good luck
Wow.
defeating them.
There's some value to that. The argument that the best players aren't available for Team Canada, Greg, that goes back to, now the Canadian is talking, Greg, and he's talking about history now, so pipe down. This goes back to 1972, right? The summit series between the Soviet Union and Team Canada. There were two players who were generally considered to be the best in the world that Canada didn't have. Bobby Orr, because of his knees, and the other one, who was the first person initially named to the team, was Bobby Hall. But because he jumped to the WHA, Clarence Campbell, the president of the National Hockey League, refused to guarantee any NHLer's contract, even though this wasn't an NHL event. The NHL refused to guarantee any NHLer's contract should they be injured in this Summit Series tournament if any non-NHL players played. So that, and when Canada lost the first game at the Montreal Forum to the Soviet Union, everyone kept saying, like right away, it was about, well, we don't have Bobby Hull. Well, we don't have Bobby Orr. We don't. They sent their best. We haven't sent our best yet. So this is nothing new in Canadian hockey. Study your history. Go back. Learn it all. This is a common refrain and a common excuse that Canadians lose.
I want all you young players out there to hit your history books and learn a thing or two about the two other things real quickly that I
know we're also about, arrogant. We're also arrogant about our history. Sorry.
The other two things I know about World Juniors every year are inevitably when the Canadians are eliminated, there will be an applauding of their effort despite the result. Darren Millard, who I love from TSN, was the first guy out of the
Sportsnet.
Box that last night.
Millard's on Sportsnet.
Oh, is he on Sportsnet? No, I'm sorry. Yeah. My mistake. I didn't know. I can't keep track of you guys, Merrick. I think you're still at CBC. So he was the first guy out of the gate last night with the after the big comeback to say, you know what? No matter if they win or lose tonight, we've got to applaud these kids for the effort. And I'm like, yeah, were you saying that at 6-1, sir? Probably not. And then the other thing I know for sure about this tournament is that when Canada does lose, and it's a 3-year losing streak, in fact, the U.S. has won gold more recently than Canada has. When they inevitably lose, there will be the trashing of opponents. It happened last year with the Russians on drunk on the plane story. And how dare they disrespect the aviation industry? And it happened this year with Kuznetsov becoming public enemy number one, the grand heel, the great disrespecter. Everybody's read the Eric Francis piece and knows my standing on that from today, the takeout piece on Kuznetsov and tangentially also Ovechkin and Semin. And I know that's going to be inevitable now. Instead of just admitting things about the game or looking at what happened, applauding the Russian coach for being the ballsiest balls or whoever balls and replacing his goalies up one in the third period.
That was huge.
Instead of identifying for the second straight year the North American style of play being trumped by cherry-picking fire wagon hockey for a good 2.5 periods, no, we're just going to take out the Russian kid because he was enthusiastic. Our guys can be kids in a tournament, but this guy needs to class it up and be a little bit more mature, don't you think?
Well, I'll tell you what. Canadian hockey fans loved what Czech goalie Peter Mrazek did in the upset of the United States when he
that
was high-fiving and jumping into the glass.
You are seriously the first. You're the first person to bring that up today in relation to Kuznetsov. I can't believe I didn't think about that before.
Canadian hockey fans loved it. Oh, look, it's a celebration. It's the joy of the sport. Look how much he's enjoying this. He's reveling in the moment. Oh, you can't criticize him. He's just having fun. He's enjoying the moment. Isn't it wonderful? They love Peter Mrazek. But when Peter Mrazek turned into Yevgeny Kuznetsov and the gun was pointed at Canada, all of a sudden the nerves got close to the skin real effing fast. Real quick, and he can't do that, and that's disrespectful. How dare he do that? Someone's got to, hey, where's Bobby Clark? Pretend that guy's Valerie Harlamov. Go break that guy's leg. All of a sudden, it's 1972, and John Ferguson's on the bench instructing Bobby Clark to break Valerie Harlamov's leg, and he goes and does it. That's what happened. So that's you're right, because we do, in Canada, demonize opponents that beat us. They have the nerve to play hockey better than we do, to the point about, Canada losing. And you're right, 3 years in a row, they haven't won gold at the U20s, or the World Junior Championships, as we call it. There was, in a lot of ways, because, you know, Greg, I don't know about you, but the older I get, I stop looking for the differences in things, and I start to look more for the similarities in things. And I think that's just a matter of age. Like, you get a little bit older, you try to look at how the universe is all tied together versus, when you're younger, you're like, oh, that sucks, and that's different than this, and this is different, and that's different, because that's an easy thing to do. But you get older, and you start to think a little bit more, I believe. So I looked for a lot more.
You say things like, I hate every. You say things like, I hate everything, right? Versus, I hate this. I hate it all. You just become a curmudgeon.
It's all.
Right? Is that where you're
it's
going?
It's all terrible. Okay. Yeah, you just become bitter.
That's where I am, actually.
But that's part of your charm, Greg. Like, that's part of the Wyshynski charm. True, if you look at some of the similarities, there is a sort of wonderful bit of symmetry here between what people generally consider the two greatest moments between the Soviet Union / Russia and Team Canada. 1972, the final, Game 8, Henderson scores for Canada. The final score was 6-5. Now, I think the greatest hockey tournament I've ever seen is the 1987 Canada Cup. I think 1987 is the best year of hockey I've ever seen, but that tournament may have produced the best hockey we've ever seen in the history of forever. And the final three games, Russia versus Canada, all three scores, 6-5. And then last night's game, Russia versus Canada, Greg, if you look at the symmetry and can find beauty in these types of things, that was the Canada-Russia score. That was the score that says this is a chapter in this ongoing feud. It's the 6-5 Canada-Russia game, bro. That's what it was last night.
That's really cool, man. With that, man. I think we should probably start the show.
Math today. Math!
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabine is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey. Pop culture. And more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Hey, Greg, you know what? If you want to add another layer of intrigue into the juniors between Canada and Russia, you know what today is the 20-year anniversary of?
What's that?
The punch-up in Piashtani.
Wow. Which, that's right. Which, by the way, after Brody Jenner treated one of the Russian players like a whale in the waters of Alaska...
That's because that's.
I felt like we were headed there. I thought we were headed to Nastyville in that game until the Canadians started to come back.
It's funny because at the end of that second period, too, we were just about to go on the air with Hockey Central tonight, and we saw Boone Jenner spear Evgeny Kuznetsov, and I thought, oh man, this is going Gunter Sobetsky. This is going double IHF. Here's Piashtani. Turn the lights out. Everyone fled the ice.
Yep.
Except for Pierre Turgeon, by the way, who did his Ned Braden and stayed on the bench as Pat Burns and Bert Templeton, the two late coaches, fumed. As it was a big brawl going. I thought it was going that way, too. But you know what? If I can pat anyone on the back, I will to Don Hay, the head coach of Team Canada, who kept his boys under control. Because that 87 team, listen, Bert Templeton, who was the head coach of the North Bay Centennials, he liked it, let's just say, rough out there. And that was a tough Canadian team.
You know who comes off the bench to fight in that situation? Hall of Famers. That's what they do. Not Hall of Famers. Stay on the bench.
Interesting about the Davidoff was the first one to come off the bench for Russia, and Luke Richardson was the first to come off the bench for Team Canada, if you're keeping score on these types of things. But you know what's interesting about the 1987 Team Canada junior squad, Greg? It is
everything.
The team, everything except for one player, which is Scott Simpson, who was the only player on that team not to play in the NHL. That team sent every player to the show, bro. And that team came back with nothing. Like, you could make the argument, like, 2005, the Grand Forks team was sick. It was maybe the best junior hockey team assembled, but that was more about the lockout than anything else, because those guys would have been in the NHL. But as far as sending a team that, you know, took players to the National Hockey League, boom, right away, you can't top 87. And they came back with nothing.
And that's why Simpson's known as the Hugh Jessamine of Team Canada.
But even he's played a game now, though.
Yeah, I know. I miss using that joke, much like I miss 1940. Like, there's certain pillars of hockey comedy that have been toppled because of achievement, and those are two of them. Chris Bartsch, we've not really done a whole lot on the Bartsch thing. If you haven't heard, there was an incident over the weekend between Bartsch and PK Subban, in which Bartsch was accused of using a racial slur towards Subban. He was kicked out. He was given a game misconduct. The linesman, Darren Gibbs, said he overheard Bartsch using a slur against Subban as he skated off the ice, and he got kicked out of the game. Hearing delayed till Thursday, Bartsch's agent, Scott Norton, has been swearing up and down on Twitter and in interviews that Bartsch did nothing wrong and will be exonerated. What do we know about this situation, Mr. Merrick?
Like many people, I've snooped around this one, and because this has become the, not to get too TMZ about it, but this is, you know, this has really become a sore spot and a major talking spot around the National Hockey League. And everyone's trying to find out what exactly was happened. I was told that it wasn't a direct racial epithet, either, i.e. it was not the N-word. Hey, N-word, get off the ice. It wasn't anything like that. You know, the worst... So I talked to someone who used to play with the San Jose Sharks last week, who told me the worst, because we're talking about this, and He said, the worst thing that I ever heard, and I don't, because I said, like, how much do you hear, like, you know, racial things being thrown around on the ice? He said, honestly, in the NHL, not very often. Like, it's just one of those places you don't go. It's really rare, and it's treated with disgust by everybody on the ice, anyone around the game. You just don't hear it. And you hear tons. Like, go sit by the glass sometimes. You hear everything on the ice, and it is salty dog, man. It is awful. And he said the worst thing that he ever heard, and the entire bench was disgusted by it, was one of his. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you have sensitive ears, just turn the volume down for a second. This is pretty crass. Said the worst thing that he ever heard was one of his coaches say to Donald Brashear as he skated by the bench, "Hey, Brashear, where do you keep your tail?" So that was the worst one he ever heard. And even everyone on his own team was like, "Coach, shut up. That's ridiculous." Like, everyone on the ice was disgusted. Everyone along the bench was disgusted, right? I was told that it wasn't – like I've heard from one person, and this is secondhand, what was actually said on the ice between Chris Barch and PK Subban. So keep in mind, I'm just getting this from one person, and I had another person tell me that it wasn't a direct racial epithet. But it was something along the line, because PK Subban had fallen and had gotten up and was skating to the bench, and for the speculation, I'm trying to be as vague about this as possible because it's not a definite, but the way it was framed to me was, it's something along the lines of, did you slip on a banana? Which is something that you would say to anyone if they fell down. And it could be one of those moments where, yeah, and then I'm sure, like, at the moment you realize I'm saying this to a person of color, you think, oh my God. Uh-huh. Foot in mouth, but it was something that he would say to anyone. If that is what he said, then where are we at with a fine or a suspension for this one?
Again, and again, just to put the caveat out there, we haven't gotten this definitive.
This is
yet.
Not this is what right. I've been able to piece together, and this is.
But
not
if it is something like that,
but as
if
a
it
talking
is
point,
like that,
if it's something like that. Because I was told, the one thing I was told definitely was it is not a racial slur.
Right. So it enters into that gray area of oopsie, accidental, wrong word to the wrong person area versus something a little bit more nefarious. This always seems to happen to broadcasters. Like the look at that little monkey go stuff, right, that have gotten guys in trouble and gotten guys suspended. And then they get to the Simmons thing from earlier in the preseason, where somebody throws a banana at Wayne Simmons. And you have a minority of fans saying, well, he was just doing it to distract him. And then you have a majority of fans saying, this guy knew exactly who was on the ice and what he was doing. Yeah. And it becomes this sort of like, unless the dude's willing to admit it, is he guilty? Or is it just a slip of the lip? Or is it just a misplaced
a
joke? I don't know.
Words. Because would he say that to Scott Gomez? Would he say the same thing to Hal Gill? Would he say the same thing to Lars Eller? I would submit, if this is what he said, then I would submit, it's kind of a standard goof. When someone falls down, I slipped on a banana peel. It's the old bit, right? Until you realize, oh my God, I may have said that to someone.
But that's the thing, though, is like, you've got to be cognizant of it. There's a responsibility on Barch to not say something ignorant to PK Subban in that spot.
Yeah,
so I mean, if you want to fine him for that or whatever, that's fine. But like, you simply can't just because you've used a joke that didn't work because of the recipient of the punchline doesn't mean you're not out of hot water. I don't buy that. I think you have to be a little bit more cognizant of who you're speaking to, understanding that you might be offending someone, understanding that if it ever left the rink, as these things frequently do now, you're going to be in a shit ton of trouble.
Do you think the NHL, now that we'll have this hearing with Chris Barch, do you think that they have a responsibility, whether they fine him, suspend him, or choose to do nothing with him, did they have a responsibility to tell the paying customer what was said?
Yes. I don't believe that you can fine somebody or suspend somebody that we pay to see and do take action within this league that we follow with such fervor. And then not be candid about it. Also, from an education standpoint, you know, if he did say something that was fairly innocuous, well, now you know that you don't say that to somebody or else you'll get a fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's important to be candid about it, for sure.
And again, I want to be perfectly clear.
Well, do you think that they should or shouldn't be candid about
it? No, I think they should. I think they should. Because I think if for no other reason, I think, and again, you don't want to get too lawyerly about this, but I mean, there have to be clear and set guidelines on what is acceptable and what is not acceptable on the ice by way of what guys say. I didn't like the fact that Mike Rupp apologized for what he said to Jody Shelley on HBO's 24/7. I thought Mike Rupp just should have said, yeah, I said it, so what? A lot of things happen on the ice. You go on, you guys wanted a behind-the-scenes look? All right, we give you a behind-the-scenes look. Now, don't hang me out to dry for it.
And actually, we didn't talk about it. I asked him that question. I asked him about the incident. Mm-hmm. And I was just asking from how surreal is it to see you talking trash on pay cable and having the world assess it or laugh with it? You know what I mean? It didn't occur to me that when I asked the question, he would turn around and be like, I'm remorseful about it. So, you know, it's Lambert said something along the lines of shaming Mike Rupp into an apology. That wasn't the case. I mean, he just kind of apologized straight away. But I thought that was interesting because I'm with you. I thought he would just say, you know what, it was a little embarrassing, whatever. But he kind of went into detail about, like, feeling remorseful and wanting to reach out to Jody Shelley and stuff.
Do we have the right to be outraged when we watch HBO 24/7? I mean, oh, it's great, behind-the-scenes look. Well, this is what it is, man. It's dirty.
Well, I think the bigger question is, should referees and officials affect a game because of things said on the ice? Or should it be strictly actions, physical actions?
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, there's something weird. Like, he got kicked out of the game for this, man. You know what I mean? He got kicked out of a game for this.
Hey, there was a similar...
It's not endorsing it, but it's still a kind of a hard... I mean, guys don't get kicked out of a game for punching another player in the face.
Yeah, I know. Sticks and stones, and you always hear. It's funny the way words for grown athletes who will take, you know, 200 punches in the face every season in an NHL year, you say one thing to them, and all of a sudden they get boo-boo face about a lot of things you didn't get pitched. I mean, I don't like it. I don't know if there's anything you can say to me that, because I guess I have thick skin. I don't know. That will offend me that much. Like, I really don't. But then again, you know, listen, I'm a middle class white guy, right? Like, I've never skated a 200 by 85 of PK Subban's life, so
that's
I don't
so
know.
Weird. That's
I
so weird.
I just don't know.
I always had you pegged for upper middle class, to be honest with you.
Middle class dude, nah, you know, public education, University of Guelph.
Katerin writes in, let's see here, 100% don't believe that the ref threw Barch out for nothing. I just don't. Again, I agree, right?
See, listen, so, I want to stress that this is just what I've been able to piece together, and I might be wrong on what he said. I think the conversation is more hypothetically, if this was what he said or something to this effect, and it wasn't a direct racial hurl, where are we at? Where are we at with it? Man, because if it was something like, slip on a banana peel or something like that to PK Subban, is that enough to get chucked from a game?
Yeah. I don't know. So there you go. There's that. Now, speaking of apologies, sir. So John Tortorella.
Today and I'm sorry.
Yeah, today and I'm sorry. That's going to be a new segment, by the way, because there's so many apologies in hockey. Merrick and I have decided
every
that we're
day.
Do today and I'm sorry.
Yeah, every day. And this, by the way, it's a total rip. Total ripoff from Le Show, which is Harry Shearer's fine radio broadcast, but he does it more for politicians, and we're doing it for hockey players. So it's different, right, Greg? It's different. It's different.
Totally different. Oh, by the
greatness
way, question,
borrows, genius steals.
The question of the day, and I've told Merrick that I'm pissed that he made this the question of the day, because after last night, it's going to seem like I'm carrying on some agenda. The question of the day is, yeah, what are the best and worst things about Canadian hockey fans? That's Merrick's question, by the way. So, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick, or hit us on email at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com. Hashtag it, MVSW. So, Tortorella apologizes. Okay, Tortorella apologizes for the inference that the NHL and NBC were working in concert to try to extend the game into overtime. And this is what Tortorella says. Regarding after the Winter Classic, the game, and my press conference, first of all, using the word disgusting, I don't think was the proper way to go about it as far as talking about Dennis and Ian, the referees, so I was wrong there. Okay, let's stop right there. No, he's completely right. The third period was a joke. It was terrible. Second of all, my tongue-in-cheek comments regarding NBC, the league, the refs, as far as what's come about here, people thinking it was fixed. Are you trying to get into overtime or that type of thinking? That was not even in my mind. They were sarcastic comments by me at the wrong time. It's frustration on my part as far as the referees were concerned and how it was done at the end of the game. So please, I want to get that straight. Not for a second, no way, time, shape, or form did I think anything like that goes on in our league or ever will. For me to question the integrity of the league, the integrity of NBC, the integrity of Dennis and Ian, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Rangers, go right down through all the people here. There's not a chance I was thinking that way. It was wrong with my sarcasm and with my frustration, and I apologize to everyone involved. I want to make sure that's straight, that was not my intent. I was unemotional during the press conference. I was frustrated with what went on, and I certainly handled it the wrong way. He's still talking, Merrick. This went on for the... I've had conversations with Coley on a number of things regarding this, and yes. But if I talk to Dennis or Ian, I'm not going to do it on the phone. I'm going to do it face to face. Why didn't he just go to the next meeting between NBC and the referees and just do it there? Then he can get everybody in the same room. Because I knew it was tongue-in-cheek in my mind, and the people that were there, at least I thought they felt the same thing. No, I regret it, but I don't think it was going to turn into something like this. But it bothers me that I'm using the word disgusting with these two guys because I really thought they reffed a good game. And aside, no, he didn't. No, not at all. He thought it was a disgusting third period. He meant it. I had frustrations at the end, and that's what came out there. I've talked to everyone I can, including Paul Holmgren with the Flyers. That was a first-class operation, that Winter Classic, and I screwed up with my mouth at the end, and I regret, and I apologize to the people all involved with that, Merrick.
A little Brenda Lee here in the background. Hold on.
I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, as over the top and intentionally, the intentional hyperbole of his initial statement was, this is even more so.
Well, first of all, he's being disingenuous by talking about the officiating, because not just on John Tortorella, but everybody, including number one ref defender Jeff Merrick, thought it was atrocious in the third period.
Yeah.
This is bad. Hey, listen, man. Players have bad periods. Coaches have bad periods. So do officials. It's okay. This one was nonstop. But this is, and I don't know where I stand on this, because you want the real and you want the raw, and you want the players and the coaches to hit the microphone as soon as possible, because that's when you get the best stuff, and that's when you get the most interesting stuff. Like, the worst thing is a cool-down period. Pat Quinn was the master of this, by the way. Pat Quinn was the master of, right after a hockey game, he would stand there and hold court with the media until his players have either scooted out the back door or had enough time to calm down and think about what they're going to say, get their equipment off, take a deep breath. Because and Greg, you're in dressing rooms, you know what it's like. The last thing a player, you know, it's easy to regret something that you say spontaneously, like right away, boom, right after a game. Hey, what's your thoughts, Alex? You're going to get something probably pretty good, because you're going to get raw, you're going to get emotion, you're not going to get filter. Quinn was the master, because he would stand there like half an hour until his guys had calmed down. And this goes back to my point about hanging guys out to dry for things that we hear on HBO 24/7, that sort of peek behind the curtain, that look through the keyhole, versus or complemented by what people say in the heat of the moment right after a game is done, where the nerves are close to the skin and the emotions are raw. Listen, does John Tortorella regret what he said? Yeah, but hands up who hasn't said something that they've regretted. Was this one a whopper? Yeah. Was it poorly timed? Yeah. Did it drive Bettman nuts? Yeah. It's just bad timing for John.
But it was also complete hyperbole, just to make a point, though. Like, I feel generally bad having been in that room listening to him, that it became an issue. I mean, the New York Daily News put this
John
as
hung
a,
himself, but John
a banner headline on the back page.
All John had to do was smile when he said it, or do like a little wink, like, "Hey, I'm just having you on for exaggeration here." Like at that moment, that was a performance by John Tortorella. All he needed to do was indicate with a laugh or a smile that he wasn't taking himself that seriously, and indicate that this is a performance. Otherwise, you just think, to your point, Greg, and I agree with you. Otherwise, you think, what the hell is this guy thinking? There's no way he can actually think that.
So you're
all you
saying
is like a wink and a
you're
laugh.
Saying that you think the NHL and NBC are working together?
That's what I'm saying, Brooksy. I'm saying they're working together. It's a secret cabal. That's what I'm saying, Brooksy.
It's like the Freemasons, man. It's like the Freemasons. Figure it out. You know, just like, right. just like Ziegler had words. Ziegler had words. We all know that.
Coming up, Angela Ruggiero, before we get to her, let us do some puck headlines.
Merrick versus Wyshynski. Puck headlines.
Dateline Buffalo Sabres. Still got that sick voice, so I'm able to do that kind of really well. The Buffalo Sabres are suddenly getting healthier, with defenseman Tyler Myers and forward Ville Leino anticipating they'll both be ready to return by this weekend. That's good news. They played pretty well. I mean, they didn't play a great game last night against a wounded Oiler team, but I thought they played okay.
Both Alberta teams are on seven-game road trips right now, Greg, and both have taken a knee. And these two road trips for the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers will define their season. Like, at the end of these road trips, and they're going poorly for both of them. This will define what they do the rest of the season, and specifically leading up to the February 27th trade deadline. I don't think that Buffalo played that great, to be honest. I think they played well enough to win, and to your point, they beat a bruised up and damaged, very damaged,
missing
Edmonton Oilers team.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, Nuge is gone. Tom Gilbert is out as well after the Dan Carcillo incident. There's only one guy in Edmonton that's bringing it every shift and every game, Taylor frickin' Hall. He has continues to be outstanding. Yeah, he
is. Totally.
I know he's a kid. That guy's a man. Like, the way he plays out there, he's the one guy that's like, I'm not licking the envelope. I know we're going down. Things aren't going well, but I don't care. I'm bringing it every single game. He's the one guy. But that Oilers team has hit, and the veterans have hit a wall. Horkoff's hit a wall. Ryan Smith has hit a wall. Like, everyone has hit a wall on that team. Jordan Eberle every now and again. Jordan Eberle had another moment yesterday in front of the Sabres net where he dangled about three or four different guys and almost scored. But the one guy who's bringing it consistently is Taylor Hall. But the Sabres, they didn't do enough last night in that game to indicate to me that the Buffalo Sabres are on their way back. That was a bruised team on the road.
They got a really nice goal last night from Nathan Gerby. And the two great things that happened after that goal, first off, he lost an edge in his celebration. He took out the referee, which is fantastic whenever that happens. secondly, Jenerette last night. Did you hear this goal call last night?
No.
Jenerette, when Gerby scores, he goes, "When you need a big one, you get it from a little one." Isn't that beautiful?
National treasure. I'll tell you what. They've had... My favorite voice that always reminds me of my youth is Ted Darling, the original play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Sabres. The media gondola is called the Ted Darling Media Gondola. If you listen to old Buffalo Sabres games, that's the voice. But the Sabres have been blessed with two beauties, Ted Darling and Rick Jenerette. Now, a lot of people think that Jenerette is a little too cartoonish for their likings. I got a lot of time for that kind of commentary in my hockey. But the Sabres have really been blessed because they've had both. Because Ted Darling played it straight, and the complete antithesis is the over-the-top, let's have fun with this thing, Rick Jenerette. Sabres fans, your franchise goes back to 1970, and already you've been spoiled with two beauties.
It's like growing up with wrestling in the 1970s versus growing up with wrestling in the 1980s. I'm a Jenerette man. Give me Coco Beware. Dateline.
I'll take Gordon Solie. I'll take Gordon
Solie. Right, exactly. Your old school NWA, AWA, old school, Vern Gagne. Dateline, Alex Ovechkin. This is another big controversy, Merrick.
Yes.
So, Washington Capitals captain Alex Ovechkin denied Wednesday that he spat in the face of Columbus forward Derek Dorsett. Asked by Katie Carrera of the Washington Post after practice, first off, he didn't know what spitting meant. And then he said, no. He said, no. I don't know. Show me that moment. I want to see it. No. Dorsett told the Columbus Dispatch that Ovechkin spit in his face. He got a little mad. He continued to play physical with him. And he said, quote, "That's probably one of the most disrespectful things someone can do, especially a guy who is the best player in the league. It's classless. Hmm. He's supposed to be a role model for the game, Merrick."
Okay, first of all, spinning in hockey, the Canadian is giving history here again, Greg. Spinning in hockey goes back years. And it, I remember the Los Angeles Kings of the 1993 semifinals against the Maple Leafs. You know what one of their biggest complaints was?
What's
Gilmore
that?
Is spitting on our skates during face-off. That's like, he keeps spitting at the draw, like just to get us off our game. Like, you pull up to the draw and spit on the skates. Right? Bill DiLego was great at this at the draw as well, but he did it out of his nose. That's an art. See, DiLego took it to an art form. Gilmore just curled one up and spat. Here's the difference now and then. Here's Derek Dorsett complaining about being spat on. I worked with Marty McSorley on the weekend, who does some work with us on Sportsnet. We were talking about Eric Lindros, who was going to play in the Winter Classic alumni game. And I was asking him about it's a pretty famous fight, Eric Lindros against Marty McSorley. And you can go and YouTube this. And at the end of the fight, you see that Marty has a little cut over his eye. He's bleeding. It's not a gusher, but he's bleeding pretty significantly. I said, well, Eric didn't catch it, did he? He said, no, as a matter of fact, the linesman came over to me and said, Eric bit you, didn't he? And Marty's like, he bit me? He says, yeah, we saw him bite you and draw blood that way. And Marty's like, I don't know about that. And they went back and watched it. And there's a moment where, you know, Lindros and Marty's heads kind of come together. And Lindros may or may not sort of take a chomp, a Mike Tyson chomp, out of Marty's forehead. And so Brian Burke is the head of. And so, you know, the Flyers are hearing it 8 ways to Tuesday about this. Lindros, it's bite gate. He bit Marty McSorley. Here's the difference between a then Marty McSorley and this idea of the code, I guess, and someone like Derek Dorsett now is complaining about being spat on by Alexander Ovechkin. Brian Burke was heading up discipline at the time for the National Hockey League and called Marty and said, Marty, we're hearing about this. I need to know. I need to know what happened. Did he bite you? Marty said, I don't know, Brian. He said, Marty, I need something here. I can't do anything unless I hear it from you that he bit. He said, I don't know. I went back and looked at it. I'm not sure. Said, Marty, I can't go ahead with this unless you tell me.
Marty, pound your foot once if he bit you.
Yeah, you know what Marty told him? He said, Brian, I don't think he did, but tell Clarkie he owes me one now.
That's awesome. That's right.
That is
awesome.
That's,
yeah, I like back then in the, hey, man, it has happened on the ice. Dumb things happen. Let's not get all crybaby about this. Let's not go high school girl about this. Like, I like that. Hey, Brian, I don't know, but tell Clarkie he owes me one. That I frickin' love.
Dateline Rick DiPietro.
Oh, what's new?
Rick DiPietro wasn't going to play on Tuesday night. He's not even off injured reserve. He's been out for a month with a groin injury. But according to New York Newsday, sir, Rick DiPietro has been injured while he's on injured reserve. Rick DiPietro's injury could be a number of things, his groin, his surgically repaired knee, or even something new. But he's on injured reserve, and he's been injured again, and he's Rick DiPietro.
I feel bad for him.
Well, like
I know everyone likes to have fun. Ah, Rick DiPietro, Charles Wong, stupid. I really do feel sorry for Rick DiPietro. Some things are of his choosing, i.e. Brent Johnson fight. All right? Sometimes you just make bad decisions. But no one wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be the most injured goaltender in the history of the NHL. Like, I'm at the point, and I got there a while ago, Greg. I'm not sure about you. But I got to the point a while ago where I legitimately feel sorry for Rick DiPietro. How can you feel sorry for him? Look at all the money he's put in his bank. I understand that. I feel sorry for the athlete in Rick DiPietro. I feel bad for that guy.
I think, I've said this before on the show, I think that he is one of those players that when he puts it together, if he's healthy for a stretch, his goals against is like, you know, 250 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a rallying around this guy. Like there was for Ray Emery, for example. Like
guys that
have been maligned as being less than stellar goaltenders, less than stellar people, whatever. I think there's going to be a rallying around DiPietro if he ever can put it together. But the question is, you know, can he ever put it together? Guy's getting hurt hurt.
If this guy can put together a healthy season and help lift the Islanders into a playoff spot, that is one of the great Masterton stories of all time.
It really is. But also, it will never exonerate Mike Milbury, no matter what he does. By the way, did you see the Blue Shits before the Winter Classic?
Yeah.
That clip?
God. Yeah,
and they put that. They put him on the ice with the kids. NBC with the hubris, man. He goes through all that stuff. Obviously, it wasn't a big deal, big misunderstanding. They put him right back on the ice with the kids. How do you like that?
now you're reaching in too much.
That didn't cross your mind during that?
You know what? It didn't.
Wow. It totally did for me.
It did, eh? Nah, see, the blue shit stuff, that to me is the Boston Bruin in Mike Milbury coming out. Because, folks, you might not like to hear it, but that's what they called him. Just like the Boston Bruins used to call, you know, Hall of Famer Harry Howell, Mary Howell. That's what they used to call the New York Rangers. Like, that
that's
is...
funny. Because during my vicious fandom days, you know, when I used to go back and forth with Ranger fans every day of my life on the internet, they would be the Rags. And where the S would be was a dollar sign. Very creative, I know. And they would call the Devils the Debbies for some reason. I think it was because of, like, the girl thing. They were calling us a bunch of girls.
As if Scott Stevens could be emasculated like that.
I thought you guys were all called the Mickey Mouses.
We were for a good stretch. I mean, that changes as well. But, yeah, so. The Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, about that. Hey, a couple of other things I wanted to get. Do we have Angela Ruggiero on the line yet? I think we're standing by for our guest today. Dan Carcillo, can I change my prediction of three games?
Why do you want to change it?
I talked to some people last night. Oh man,
he's getting nailed, right? Yeah, totally. So. But you still believe what you believe. I still play, right?
Hey, I still believe that was. Put it this way. If Tom Gilbert was Nick Lidstrom, who we use as the measuring stick for defensemen, you know what happens on that play?
What?
He bails out and lets Dan Carcillo take the puck, and then he puts his arms around him on the boards, uses a good stick, and gets away with it, and gets away with the puck. Like, the mistake that Tom Gilbert makes was, A, he looks at Carcillo and does that let's engage look, and he was in bad body position and is a weaker player than Dan Carcillo. Like, Dan Carcillo, in my mind, is going to be, well, one, suspended because he's Dan Carcillo, but two, he's going to be suspended because he's stronger than Tom Gilbert, and he's going to be suspended because Tom Gilbert isn't as strong on his skates.
So it's going to be five plus. So what is it going to be?
I think so, but I think it's going to be six. I'm changing from three to six.
Yeah, it's six.
I don't think it should be anything, but I think it's going to be six.
It'll be six, and then it becomes when is he going to serve it? Because he's hurt pretty freaking badly, that guy.
He's totally gonna get off. He's actually serving the games because he's gonna be dinged. His knee's bad.
Well, he has to serve it when he gets back, though. You have to serve it eventually.
While you're injured.
No games. Got to be games, sir. Serve it while you're injured.
He's gonna be injured, then come back and then serve his games.
Totally. He said he has to. You have to serve the games when you're healthy, right? Don't you think?
No.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So they won't put him on IR or anything. It'll just be he won't play, and then they'll put him on IR after the suspension. Okay, I understand what you're saying then.
Wink, wink.
Nudge, nudge. I still like the idea of when Kadri got in trouble in the AHL before he got called up, like, earlier this year, whether the games in the NHL could exonerate the games in the AHL, or whether that suspension should carry over or anything like that. I always enjoyed that conversation.
The American League looks at NHL suspension, and the NHL does likewise, and there's that reciprocal sort of idea. But I mean, there are ways to get around American Hockey League suspensions for players that can come up in the NHL. There are ways to get around it, but I mean, I remember Brian Burke could have called Nazem Kadri up for a cut. This is last year. Could have called Nazem Kadri. This is after the Philadelphia Phantoms game. Could have called Nazem Kadri up for a couple of games and burned off some AHL time, but chose not to. Or sorry, sent him down for some dead games, but chose not to while the Maple Leafs weren't playing. Like, there was a stretch where the Maple Leafs weren't playing for four games in a row, but the Marlies were. And even though he was on the Maple Leafs roster, could have sent him down to the American Hockey League, technically, just a paper transaction, sit for those two games. So he serves his AHL suspension and then comes back up to play with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but chose not to because Brian Burke has a deeper sense of the relationship between the NHL and the American Hockey League, and wanted to respect the fact that Dave Andrews had suspended the gentleman. And by the way, as much as we think the National Hockey League suspends, are you on the do you get AHL emails? Like, do you subscribe to that list
every day,
dude?
Right,
every single day. You think Brendan Shanahan is tough every day? It's not the Shanahammer, it's the Andrews hammer. He's pounding on guys. They're trying to correct behavior through suspension down there in the American League. It's rough rider, man. I'm telling you.
Couple questions of the day as we wait for our guest. The question of the day, courtesy of Jeff Merrick. What's the best and worst thing about Canadian hockey fans? gotten some interesting answers, I think, to this one. By the way, a Chicago Town fan 84 writes in, complete BS if Carcillo gets more games than Rene Bork for that blatant and intentional elbow in Backstrom's head. I agree. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was... Bork's he had to five. Reach to hit Bork's, Backstrom last
Bork's,
night.
Bork's getting five.
Totally.
No, he's getting five.
Brad Spencer, best, not having to watch Pierre McGuire anymore. Worst, having to deal with Glenn Healy. This was the best of worst things. That's the best of worst things about being a Canadian fan, I suppose, right?
The best thing about being a Canadian is not having to hear Pierre McGuire.
That's what he says.
See,
he's on Versus NBC rather.
Yeah. And he's not doing the juniors anymore. You see, I may be in the minority on this one, and I know people don't like the delivery, and it's kind of like drinking from a fire, taking a drink of water from a fire hydrant for some people. It can be overwhelming because he batters you. But you know, when you break it right down, McGuire is bringing you some big time information and background on players, like for what they want him to do. That guy comes correct, and that guy comes with tons of information. You can argue the style, and not everyone's style, but the one thing you can never accuse Pierre McGuire of is not being prepared.
Encyclopedic knowledge dispensed at incorrect times. Real quick, before we get to our guest, Paperwork Ninja. Kyle Shaw, best and worst thing. Worst thing about Canadian fans is their sense of entitlement. Best is passion for the game. Spencer Raypole, the best and worst thing is the walk from the parking lot to the rink in minus 30 degrees with the fellow fans. And this one, I think, is a great way to summarize what's been happening in the last 24 hours. This is Martian Balls. Great name.
Oh, my.
Best, passion. Worst, constant inability to resist American hockey trolls.
And that would be you, Greg Wyshynski, followed closely by Ryan Lambert. Hey, let's get right to our guest. She is an Olympic gold medalist. She is a Harvard grad. You saw her on The Apprentice, ladies and gentlemen. She is a right-hand shot, and she wears the best number in the history of the game. She is Angela Ruggiero, and she joins us now, recently retired. Angela, how are you today?
Good. Nice to hear from you.
A pleasure to have you on board. First of all, congratulations. You wrapped up the career on Twitter, of all places. congratulations on a stellar career. When you have your initial look back at it, and as more time goes, you know, you always sort of sharpen your focus and sharpen your pencil on what you've done already. But what comes out is a couple of big moments from your career in your mind?
Well, certainly, you know, I feel fortunate to have had such a long career with USA Hockey. But, you know, talk of it. I think most athletes would say winning an Olympic gold medal probably is the top thing you could do in your sport. So we did that, you know, in 98. So for me, I was the youngest on that team, but definitely a highlight. Playing at Harvard, getting the opportunity to win a national championship there would be another highlight for me. And then as I, you know, got a little older, just having a different role on USA Hockey, more of a leader, I think that was fun to see kind of come full circle. So I could talk on and on about all the different experiences I had. It was a blast all along.
I was reading in the LA Times that you were inspired to skate by Wayne Gretzky's arrival in LA. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I grew up actually the year before Gretzky came out to LA. There was probably half a dozen rinks in the state. I mean, you had to drive hours to get to the rink, and when he came, the popularity just soared. And you know, I was a diehard Kings fan. I knew every player on the roster. You know, I got to meet Gretzky when I was 8. Wanted to play for the LA Kings. You know, I was just typical young hockey fan, but happened to be from a very sunny state where not a lot of hockey exists. But it's really cool to go back there now and to see the popularity. There's 3 pro teams there, and even though the sport, you still have to drive far. There's so many more rinks. Not like up in Canada, of course, but relatively speaking, it's cool to see the growth.
You know, I always felt A, that you're not only a great hockey player, but also a great ambassador for the sport. And I think everyone sort of shares that vibe about Angela Ruggiero. But I have to ask, and I've always wondered this about you, Angela. Did you ever have, because on the one hand, you know, you're an ambassador and you want to grow the game, but at the same time, you have to balance that out with actually, you know, being part of your team and not making the shine on you too much in the dressing room. Did you ever have a hard time just saying no to things. Because I would imagine being Angela Ruggiero in the back of your mind that even if you're tired, if you have something else to do, because you feel compelled to grow the game and make the women's game greater than it is, you have this in the back of your mind, this idea that I can't say no. Did you have that battle during your career?
You know, I think I always welcome the opportunity to grow the game, not just on the women's side, but the men's side. I mean, grow the sport of hockey is, you know, it's in my blood. I've played it since I was a kid, loved every second. So, yeah, at times, you know, you interviews or you're being pulled a million different directions. You got to get on another flight. Yeah, that's for sure. It wears on you sometimes, but when I think when you have that that thought in the back of your head, and you know, our team had a saying, pressure is a privilege. I think Billie Jean King came up with it, you know, a while back, but kind of that mentality of like, look, you're in a position to really help your sport. That's part of what comes with the role. And so I'm, you know, Charles Barkley years ago, he used to talk about, I'm not a role model. I'm like, well, whether you like it or not, you are. I mean, I think every professional athlete really is. And there's an obligation with that. So I've welcomed it.
In Vancouver, did you guys have gigantic Magnum bottles of Sam Adams or Budweiser prepared in case things had worked out differently?
Hopefully the staff had that figured out. Unfortunately, we didn't get to uncork anything, but yeah, hopefully we would have figured that one out.
What was the environment? The environment up there, I was there for the games, and like I try to describe what the environment was to people. It was an amazing moment to have this rabid, bellowing home crowd and the tension in the building where you guys were like an invading army. Like you guys were there to basically ruin their year if you had beaten them on their home ice.
Yeah, that was the goal. you know, they ruined our parade in Salt Lake, so to speak. But I mean, the cool thing I've always loved going up in Canada is, I mean, I'm, you know, I like to push people's buttons. I'm out there on the ice. I'm trying to get in your head, and you know, I've nothing better than the opposing team's crowd yelling at you specifically because you know you've gotten to them. You know you've done something where they're like specifically cheering against you. And up in Canada, the crowds are always amazing. So, you know, I like to play in front of big crowds no matter where you are, and it just happens that Canada always does a great job, and their fans, yeah, they're a little, you know, crazy against the Americans, but at the same time, they're there and they're cheering for our sport. So and, I like it all.
You were, I talked to Cassie Campbell this morning, and we were talking extensively about you. And the words she used to describe you, hard player, nasty, strongest player I've ever played against. And I asked her if you ever chirped on the ice. And she said no, she didn't chirp, she didn't say anything. As a matter of fact, Cassie told me she had a little saying above her stall. And it comes from one of your former teammates, Laurie Baker, who was pretty good with the yip. And the quote from her to Cassie was, "Bitches never win." And Cassie said that she put that above her stall, and that always inspired her. And she said when she was doing Handshake Alley, it was all that everything in her power not to say that back to Laurie Baker when they were doing Handshake Alley. When you were on the ice, was there ever a time that you were someone that beaked a lot, that tripped a lot, that talked to other players, or did you just say, you know what, I'm strong enough that I don't have to say anything?
Well, Cassie and I go way back. We had fun on the ice, to say the least. We, you know, we were intense rivals, and with that, you know, I love that rivalry. But I'm not going to lie, I chirped occasionally, but for me, the biggest thing was, my goal in my time I played was to intimidate in a way, but through your physical play, because, you know, if I had a player skating down the ice and they see it's me, my hope was that they're just going to dump the puck. They're not even going to try to go around me because they're going to know if you get next to me, I'm going to send a message, not necessarily run you like, you know, you can't do that in our sport, but be physical, be in their face, not let them beat you, you know, embarrass them, take the puck from them, like whatever it is that the next time they skate down that ice, they're going to think about passing the puck instead or dumping it. So yeah, I think for me, physical play was always the best way to get the clear advantage versus you could chirp every once in a while, but if you're playing against a solid player that doesn't affect them, then you're just wasting your breath.
So women's hockey is in an interesting place in the U.S. because I think, you know, we've all seen the numbers. The numbers are growing, and the interest is growing, and there's obviously a lot of women that follow the NHL and want to play. Internationally, it gets a little dicier, and then you start hearing these conversations about the status of it as an Olympic sport, and you get old white guys trying to make decisions for the future of the sport based on what they see numbers-wise at the Olympics. Talk about where women's hockey is in 2012.
Well, I think it's in a good spot. I mean, it's, again, everything's relative. You look at the men's game. When they first started, there were only a couple teams that were doing anything, and you had to give it, you know, really a century for it to get to where it is today. So, relatively speaking, we're still growing. There's obviously a long way to go. I'm not worried about our sport in the Olympics. I think there's too many things in our favor. I'm hoping and encouraged that the IHF is putting some money finally behind the women's program. I mean, they get every international federation receives a lot of money as part of their participation in the Olympics. So the fact that the IHF is now taking some of that and specifically dedicating it to the women's game, I think is about time, which is it's encouraging. Hopefully they're doing some things for the less developed countries like a Finland or Russia or a Czech. But at the end of the day, it's up to that individual federation. I mean, USA Hockey, Hockey Canada do a great job supporting their women's teams, and it's I think more of a cultural difference that you're seeing internationally. Where, you know, why doesn't Russia have a gold medal team? They absolutely should. Look at their men's side. They got all the tools. They know the sport. They just haven't quite figured out how to turn that and do that for their women's team. So I'm encouraged, and I think as the game continues to evolve, you'll get more fans. Once they get and actually see the game at the top levels, they'll say, hey, this is a good sport, versus maybe in years past I heard a little more, oh, women's hockey, not a big deal. But I think when you get into the building, top match, U.S.-Canada, it's hockey at its finest.
Angela, when you because you mentioned the rivalry with Canada, and that was a nasty one. And listen, I was on the Canadian side of things, and man, you scared the hell out of a lot of Canadians. I'll tell you that. But I mean, do you find that, because I know you and Wick had it out a number of different times, and you know, you and Cassie. I mean, there was, you know, Ben Smith. Hey, you don't talk to the Canadian girls. It's, you know, that's us versus them. I mean, this was a nasty rivalry. Do you find that the minute you retire, you drop some of the animosity?
Yeah, I mean, I loved the rivalry because, you know, I always said I lived to play against Canada. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you're a pro guy, you have how many dozen teams you can play. You might have a specific guy that you don't get along with, and he gets traded. And for us, we have one main competitor. So that animosity and that rivalry only continues to build, especially for some of the older players that have been around longer and been a part of it. It's not to say it's disrespect or, you know, people. Media always tried to get me to say I hated Canada. I'm like, I'm not going to say that. I don't hate them. Like, I actually love them. I love playing Canada. I love the adrenaline you get going in one of those intense battles. But yeah, now that I'm retired, I mean, I'm sure it'll be easier to sit by them. And actually, I think it would be fun to sit back and say, oh, I remember that time. And yeah. I'm sure some of them don't like me, probably don't want to talk to me. But I'm sure there's others that get it. You know, it was both teams coming and trying to propel their sport and trying to win and get every edge possible. So if you actually follow the rivalry, it sounds like you have. It was fun. I mean, it still is and will be in Sochi.
Listen, Angela, I'm from New Jersey. It's a safe place for you. You can say you hate Canada. Don't let America intimidate you. You can say you hate Canada.
True story. The only song I can play on the piano is "O Canada" because my dad was obsessed with Canada when we were younger. Because, you know, we're a hockey family and we loved hockey. So no hard feelings.
look, building bridges, not borders. Hey, I want the last question for me, Angela, and thank you for your time and congratulations on a wonderful career. And as a Canadian hockey fan, thank God you're not playing for the United States anymore. talking to Cassie, I said, Cassie, what is the worst part about being a hockey player? And you know what she said to me, Angela? She said, shopping. because I can't find clothes that fit me because of the shoulders and the lats and, you know, hockey butt, of course. And it's not like
hockey
the guys
butt.
Where, you know, there'll be a number of different tailors. Hey, come on in. I'll make you tailored suits. I'll get this all taken care of for you. And she said we would have to go shopping as a team just to make ourselves feel better. If you go shopping on your own, you feel absolutely awful. So that's what Cassie said to that question, trying to find jeans that fit. Are ridiculous for a woman's hockey player. What was the worst part about being a hockey player for Angela Ruggiero?
The worst part, well, shopping. I would have to agree is such a pain. Anyone that comes out with a female tailored line of clothing will make millions of dollars out there. So, get to it. The hockey butt's hard to shop for. Worst part about being, you know, the biggest thing that I'm recognizing, I think, as an a tense elite athlete for, you know, the last 16 years I play on the national team. One of my former teammates came up to me and she said, so you're going to get your weekends. And I never thought about that. And for me, it was now I actually have the freedom to have my weekends and go and watch things. But there, I mean, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that I didn't enjoy. And that's why I did it for so long.
Well,
but now I have my weekends to do whatever I want.
We're waiting for the Angela Ruggiero hockey butt pants line. Now that we've put this sort of idea in the back of your mind,
that'd be an interesting commercial. Last one for me as well. So I keep having conversations with people on our blog about whenever something comes up involving chirps on the ice between players, involving one calling the other a girl or trying to emasculate them, or Mike Milbury calling Henrik and Daniel Sedin Thelma and Louise and that kind of thing. And the thing I keep on hearing is while a white kid from New Jersey like me may not necessarily see this as offensive, there are a legion of female hockey players that see this as insulting and beyond the pale as like a racial taunt. And do you feel the same way on that score?
You know, I would definitely have to agree. I think if you've never felt it, you can't really understand it, but I mean, essentially, if you're calling someone a girl, kind of guy a girl, you're basically telling them they're not as strong or powerful or whatever. Like you said, you're taking their masculinity away in some form. So for me, I think you could probably pick something else. It's not the most offensive thing I've ever heard, but the fact that you perpetuate the idea that if you're a girl, you're inferior, then that is where that kind of slur, I think, could really not be a good thing and for a future generation, especially think about it, you have a daughter. I mean, yeah. I would say, think about what do you want your daughter to hear? Do you want your son to go around, you know, making fun of girls and your daughter's getting the tail end of that? So trying to make the world a better place, you know, obviously. If you can eliminate that, that'd be great.
Making the world a better place one slap shot at a time. She's Angela
there you go.
Ruggiero. Angela, thanks. Hey, listen, take a bow for a wonderful career. Well-traveled, well-storied, and well-medaled. Take a bow, Angela Ruggiero. Thanks so much for doing this.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Angela Ruggiero, there she is. Always curious about retirement, too, Greg, because I'm of the belief.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is something standard for retired hockey players we should ask them. And you see this in fighting, specifically boxing and mixed martial arts. I'm of the belief that the minute you think you're retired or you're thinking about retirement, you're retired.
You think so?
That once that enters your mind, something changes in you as a player. You see it in fighting, and it comes out right away. We just saw with Brock Lesnar and Alistair Overeem, where he said, yeah, I promised my family if I lost this fight, I'd retire. Like, even to entertain that conversation, I think you lose a little bit of something.
But you could fight it, though. I mean, like, you think about Madonna. There's no question that Madonna was thinking about retiring during his swan song, right, with the North Stars uniform and everything else. But he fought it, right?
Yeah, so, no, you can hang on.
Yeah.
I mean, you really can. You can hang on and then finally eventually go, you know, go gentle into that good night, Dylan Thomas. But I think that once you check out mentally or even entertain the question of checking out in your mind, I think at that point, when you look back on your career, and if you're honest with yourself, you say to yourself, yeah, you know, I dragged it out a couple of years, but that was a moment where in my mind I retired. That I was, you know, not just the back nine, but I was playing, you know, holes 17 and 18 at that point.
One more question of the day thingy before we head out. This is from Mark Pargas. The best thing about Canadian hockey fans, they are quick to appreciate those non-Canadians who have taken some time to show some interest in the game, its history, and associated trivia. For example, you get bonus points in the bar for knowing about the Flamborough Mats Klamatos senior team.
Hey, now the Dundas Mats Klamatos. Yeah, okay.
And more points for having been a teenage fan of a short-lived, pathetic WHA franchise like the Denver Spurs. Ditto the pathetic NHL franchise Colorado Rockies. Worst thing about Canadian fans, bonus points be damned if Canada should lose on home ice in international tournaments. They quickly circle the wagons and declare their team, which as usual will be loaded with superior talent, as a decided underdog, albeit hungry for revenge, when the tournament is contested on European soil the next year. Overall, the good things outnumber the bad. I thought that was an outstanding email as far as trying to capture the spirit of the thing. That was Mark Pargas, a good listener for the show.
Mark Pargas, you are a Dickie Dunn. You captured the spirit of the thing, definitely. And I'll tell you what, as much as this may pain Canadians, and I'm one, that was the right outcome yesterday. Like, for the good of the game and growing the game and, you know, building up rivalry, that was a really good outcome. You know, just like in 1972, I still maintain to this day, Greg, the wrong team won the Summit Series. Because the Soviets lost to Team Canada, but they won because they grew their game and they adapted their game and they changed their game and they become greater for it. Canada, quote-unquote, won the Summit Series. Whoop-de-doo, we're still great, right? And nothing changed in Canadian hockey. So who really won with a capital W versus a lowercase w? I would submit the Soviets actually won that at large versus Canada, who just happened to get the best of an eight-game series.
The body of Jeff Merrick was found dangling from the CN Tower. No one knew why.
No one knows where I live, right? I'm going to hide in the High Park.
Sorry, here, Mr. Merrick, have some maple syrup. Well, this tastes funny. Oh.
Drops to the floor.
Here, let me get you a drink. Oh, it's Merrick. Hey, let me get you a drink. No, you stay here. I'll be right back. Torches surround the Sportsnet studios.
Oh, man. I haven't looked on Twitter here for about 15 minutes. I shudder to think of what I'm going to get for not being a good Canadian, standing up for the kids.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we've the red team won. Just to let everybody, guys.
Listen, it's the American-Canadian thing that I've been going, that's been going on for a little bit, right, with me. It's trolling. It's all it is. If you got upset about it, I'm sorry. I'm just picking at the scabs, you know? So, like, it ain't no biggie. But it's fun. It's fun, exactly. If you can't have fun, why? What are you doing, right?
Yeah, you get it. And listen, no one's gonna always win. And for a while, the Montreal Schadenfreude, right? We've talked about this before. Taking delight in the misery of others, and there's a healthy dose of that everywhere. It's like criticism on Twitter, Greg. I treat it like snake venom, and I'm cool with it. Every now and then, you get the flames. Okay, yeah.
Suck Twitter criticism out of my butt if you need to.
I don't know. You have Rob Pizzo for that now. You're a little snuggle buddy from Philadelphia. I got flamed again, Rob. I can't reach it.
Suck the Twitter venom out of my butt.
I can't reach it. Can you come over? I won't tell anyone. Please.
Pee on my leg. I got stung by the Twitter criticism jellyfish.
Quick, 5 minutes or I'll die. This show goes creepy places.
All right, listen. It's time to end the show. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Greg Wyszynski, Yahoo Sports.
John Madden signed 1 year. The Florida Panthers. Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet. Enjoying a day off. And the minute I'm done this podcast, I'm going downstairs to play hockey with my son.
Trying to get him on the old Dan Girardi routine, huh?
I said it before, man. It's between TJ Merrick and Landon Girardi. First overall is up for grabs. Hey, if there's any agents listening right now, we're without representation, but we're entertaining offers. You know where to find me.
So Scott Norton, if you're still listening after the Barch segment, then please reach out to
me. I thought we were good on Barch.
No, I think so.
I just
assumed that Norton's listening if we mentioned Barch in the description of the show.
Oh, yeah.
He seems the type. By the way, 24/7 Thursday night, everybody. If you're trying to watch it tonight, don't. It's not on. Watch Top Chef instead. Then watch the finale 24/7 tomorrow night. Full report on that Friday show. There you go. So thanks for listening, everybody. And good luck in the bronze medal game, Canada.
Wow.
Should be a good time.
Did you enjoy beating up on Latvia? Did that make you feel good?
No, because I wanted to be relegated because playing Japan and, like, Angola would be so much easier than playing Canada every year.
Hey, how come everyone blasted Kuznetsov for getting 9 points against Latvia, but Peter Forsberg is considered a hero for putting up 10 against Japan when he played in the World Juniors? Just saying.
I know a difference between the two.
One didn't torch Canada. Actually, Forsberg did torch Canada. And even internationally with the Peter Forsberg move, the postage stamp move on Corey Hirsch that they put on a stamp. Hey, you want to talk about showboating? All right. Peter Forsberg scores that great that we saw UC Okanagan score with again yesterday, which actually a ripoff of Kent Nielsen. That's right. The Kent Nielsen move scores against Corey Hirsch. You want to talk about taunting? Sweden put it on a stamp. Stamps go all over the world. That's like the original Twitter. We're putting this on a stamp so mail goes all over the world with what? Peter Forsberg with his goofy move going on Corey Hirsch. That goes all over. That is taunting, man.
It's the original. It's the original posterizing. It's like I put this move on you, and it's a postage stamp now. By the way, if you haven't seen it on Puck Daddy, on Puck Headlines today, Harrison Mooney's got an image from one of the Swedish papers where it's Granlin losing the puck off his stick, and then they put it on a postage stamp. It's brilliant. It's so funny. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
We're done. Thank you.